You're listening to the E-commerce Impact Podcast, where we share the latest marketing strategies to grow your e-com store and have more impact. Hi, Jess, and welcome along to the E-commerce Impact Podcast. It's awesome to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me, Jesse. We have similar names there.
I know, we really do. It's a first on the podcast. So do you ever get called Jesse, or are you always Jess or Jessica?
I'm always Jessica, if you don't know me, and Jess as soon as we have the first encounter. So that's my preference. And then Jesse, never really. So
that's good. Well, that would work out fine for us to be friends because I'm always Jesse. So it works
there
out.
There we go. Yes, let's go.
So I'd love you to introduce yourself to our audience and let us know what you've been working on lately.
Yeah, so my name is Jess Servion. I have been a CX and retention leader for about 15 plus years. Previously, my background was in SaaS and most recently in e-com. In the last couple of years, I have been at the CX leader for Feastables, but I also do a lot of fractional work in the e-com space, doing fractional CXO work for other brands, and we'll dive deeper into it and the importance of CX and retention for e-com.
Yeah, super excited to dive into this topic. We haven't actually had a CX person on the podcast before, and we haven't delved a lot into retention either, so both topics will be awesome. So tell me, why did you choose customer experience as your field of expertise or speciality?
Why I chose the career in customer experience is because it's the study of consumer behavior and user experience that really just gets me going. And it's what I apply to like all of my customer experience principles and like how I coach teams, how I help fractionally, how at Feastables, like what I've built in like the CX world is like, it's all based on what is your user's behavior and how do we build a relationship with them and how do we make them feel like they are like the dopest customer possible and you want them to continue coming back to you.
That's such a great quote. I love that. What advice do you have for fast-growing e-commerce brands on customer experience?
Yeah, so I think the biggest piece of advice that I have, just like coming from my career, coming from who I am and like what everything that like I talk about, is when you start a brand, like you can be very focused on like, okay, let's get this product out into the market. Let's make revenue. Focus on people coming back for their second or third sale. But ultimately, you really need to focus on the customer experience that your customer experiences through your brand, whether that's through the packaging, the user behavior in your website, what happens with your customer service team, what's happening with your email and SMS marketing campaigns, really thinking about customer experience through the entire life cycle of your customer is so important because you can get that first sale. But if you're not building relationships with your customers and making them, every single one of them, feel like they're VIP customers, then you're not going to retain them for the next sale and, you know, loyal to your brand as a whole.
Exactly right. And, you know, these days, customer acquisition is more and more expensive. And for a lot of brands, it's that repeat purchase that is where the profits lie. So it's super, super important. At what stage do you think kind of really focusing on customer experience as a discipline becomes important for a brand?
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll get deeper into this, but I mean, for me and like just the way I think about it, and maybe this is because I come from SaaS before e-com, I think about the customer and the customer success with your brand and the customer's experience should actually be more of a thought at the beginning stages of your developing your brand, of like getting it out into the market. And the reason why, and again, we'll dive way deeper into this, but it's not, customer experience isn't just customer support. Customer experience is also your consumer insights, your product market fit. Customer experience is also how you're acquiring your customers from a pre-sale perspective. Customer experience is also post-purchase. And what I mean by post-purchase is, how are your customers receiving that product from fulfillment? How are they, you know, how are they interacting with that product? What's their review of that product, right? So, I mean, it's just, I personally believe that if you're starting a brand, you should be focusing on customer experience as one of the first disciplines of your brand as a whole.
Amazing. And what does that look like? Like when you start working with, you know, on a fractional basis, say with a brand, what are you sitting down and kind of like, look, what's the process? How does it work?
Yeah. So, you know, without giving it all away, because call a girl, right? But, but, you know, like how I come into it in any brand that I'm looking at is like, okay, so yes, I'm going to deep dive into like your customer support first. And the reason I'm actually deep diving into your customer support is because I really want to look at like how your, what tickets you're getting, what are your inquiries that you're getting, how you're handling those inquiries. So not necessarily on an efficiency basis. Like, yes, we can like definitely dive into like making all of like that, like more like your support section, like more efficient, but really like the first pillar that I come in and look at is like, what are your customers saying? What is the consumer insights from your customers? So, you know, and then the second point of that, like of doing that audit is like, then I go into like marketing campaigns and, you know, yes, of course, like I want to look at like your click-through rates and all of like those basic like metrics and like how much revenue you've generated from it. But really, I want to look into like, what is the copy that you're putting out there for your customer? What's that brand voice and tone that you have for your brand to talk to your customer? And then third, you know, it's taking all of that information. Again, it really, it, the first pillar is the consumer insights, but it's taking all of that information and then developing out like what I like to call a feedback loop and like understanding like, okay, so if your customers are saying, you know, they love these, like the quality and the taste or the texture of your food product, or they are having issues with like your sizing or the styles of their apparel. Like these are all insights that we should be diving deeper into from that like fractional base, but also like you should be looking at this as a brand as a whole. So, I mean, that's like my first and foremost thing that I'm doing is like, I'm looking into like what your customers are saying and how you're speaking to your customer. And then lastly, you know, and this is very like tactical advice, but you can look at all the consumer insights of it. And like, you don't necessarily have to go on your, you go and do your market research, right? And like, you get like your, go and like talk to hundreds of people about how they feel about the product. Your customer is literally there screaming at you, telling you what it is that they are, that they like, what they don't like. And then, but you know, going back to my lastly part is I also am looking at what is your site journey? Like if we're talking about D2C, like online, like, right, what is that user's experience coming in from going out through the website, going through checkout, going through, you know, all of the communications that are popping up at your customer, save 10%, do this, sign up for this email. Like what does that entire journey look like? And I'm mapping out that journey and then breaking down each of the touch points so we can, so, you know, when we're doing this fractionally and looking at your customer experience fractionally, I'm looking at like, all right, from a post-purchase perspective, but I'm also looking at that pre-sale perspective to give you a map, a treasure map essentially of like all of the touch points and all of the optimizations that we could be taking care of.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So you're looking at like, you're looking at the ad copy itself, and then whether that's kind of like a total mismatch with the tone of voice that the customer experience people are using.
Yeah.
Interesting. And what are the common mistakes you kind of typically pick up on with brands at this stage? Have you got any stories of brands that were, you know, you kind of uncovered some really, some big messes in terms of how they were, or how they were doing things when you came along?
Yeah, I don't want to say like huge misses because I don't, anybody that listens to this, I don't want them to be like, dang, that's me. But I will say one of the biggest things, and again, it goes back to consumer insights. Like I cannot preach this enough. Like I will stand on a hill and put my flag at the top of that hill that your customer is literally screaming at you and telling you what it is that they like and they don't like. And so often I see brands say like, okay, great, I have my product reviews. Great, you have your product reviews, but like, are you actually looking at them besides just like responding to somebody who has a negative review? Are you actually looking at it? Are you actually understanding those trends and those insights? And are you actually putting those trends and insights back into the company? So again, going back to like my feedback loop, but I mean, I think that's like one of the biggest things that I see, like, you know, and just to get a little bit more granular on like mistakes that I've made, like I've worked with a couple of CPG brands where they have all of the things set up, like with their product reviews and then even their NPS reviews, but like, and their customers telling them like, hey, the quality of this particular product isn't right. And it's been going on for months and months and months. And that particular product was on the shelves or like being sold. And there was no look into like the trend itself. It was literally just replacing the product, but not actually looking into the trend and taking that back to supply chain and R&D and say like, hey, like there's an issue with this particular product.
Interesting. Yeah. So when it's done well, are we talking like it's a monthly review of like every kind of data channel? So you're looking monthly at the customer reviews, monthly at the themes around the customer tickets, the comments on the ads, wherever else the kind of feedback, the post-purchase survey, and you're looking at those kind of like, is there a typical cadence that you would look at that in order to pick up on it in a timely manner, but also not be kind of like distracted by that one angry person?
Yeah, of course. So what I actually do, like one of my deliverables that I do with like my consulting work, and, you know, and I've also built this at Feastables too, is I create this, you know, feedback loop that's literally taking all of your product reviews, all your NPS, all your tickets, like all these things, all the comments in, you know, post-checkout, like all, like any of these survey touch points, right? And I created like a very scrappy dashboard. Like I'm not saying go out and buy a tool. Okay. I'm like literally saying like, you can be very scrappy with your Google Sheets and your Excel. And so like one of the things that I do with this, like with my clients is we kind of, depending on like if the client already has a CX manager or if they don't, it's like essentially put like this person through, I put like their team kind of through like a boot camp way, right? Like a CX bootcamp of like taking all this data, putting this into like a dashboard, right? And then the cadence of that is actually on a weekly basis, not on a monthly basis. So it can be weekly and it can be monthly. But the reason is because you should be tracking these trends on a weekly basis. Because if you have any sort of, again, going back to like CPG in particular, but if you have any like sort of like adverse reactions or, you know, issues with like a product that's on the shelves, like you, that's something that you need to alert like immediately, right? And so like, that's why I like it in like more of a weekly basis. I have also had an apparel client who I had on like a weekly cadence for like this type of reporting back to the company because they were churning out, I wouldn't say churning out. Churning out is not a right word to use. They were producing more SKUs. Like it's an apparel company, so you have like a ton of SKUs, right? Like sometimes you have like hundreds of SKUs and you're always in like product innovation, right? And you're always in product innovation and styles, sizes, all of these things. But I think like that feedback on styles being accepted, on sizing, on, you know, if the quality is good or not for like that product is so important for companies who are like constantly developing out new SKUs. So those are just like two different types of aspects of like CPG and apparel, but I think it's really important to look at it on a weekly basis and then again on a monthly basis. And then second, the last thing too is like, it's not just about the dashboard. It's also about how do you communicate to like executive level people and then also be able to communicate information to maybe like the supply chain manager, right? Like, you have to be able to take all of these data points and then be able to put, whether it's into a slide or it's into like a written form of like what is actually going on with your customers and being able to communicate it to like different types of individuals within the company.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So what was I going to say? What kind of metrics are you tracking in that dashboard? I'm presuming that dashboard is like metrics based, numbers based, is it?
Yeah. So of course, you know, if I'm looking at product reviews, like, of course I want to know at like what 1 through 5, like what is, you know, what's happening in each one of those. But then I also break it down by SKU in like CSAT customer satisfaction score for tickets, right? Like customer support tickets. Like, of course, I want to know what like the satisfaction rating is of like a customer's ticket in particular. those are a few of them. And then, you know, MPS, like I want to look at like all-time MPS opposed to like weekly MPS. Were there any sort of different trends there? And sorry, MPS is mm-hmm. Net Promoter Score. And, you know, I looking at that, and then like when it comes down to post-checkout surveys, it's not really metrics-based, but it's really more like trends analysis-based, because like what post-checkout surveys is doing is really like telling you like the attribution. But I also think it's an opportunity to look at like demographic information. You can ask your customer in those, like, who are you purchasing for? And again, if I'm asking who in a post-checkout survey, who are you purchasing for? That's not really a metric. That's more of an informative thing that I'm being told. So, and then, you know, when we go into like retention marketing standpoints, right? Like, of course, like you're looking at like your click-through rate and your open rates and like those basic metrics, because that's telling me is my copy hitting? Is it right in the right tone of voice? Is this like actually captivating this audience? And then, sorry, I'm really nerding out right now. I told you I would nerd out.
No, no, then, I love it. I love it.
And like, not even, you know, like not even just like, so in this dashboard, like I know I'm telling you like all the survey touch points, but like also the retention marketing touch points. But also when I'm also looking at the transactional email touch points as well, because, and I'll tell you why this is really important to look at and like not forget about your transactional emails. 9 times out of 10, a customer is like, probably not good. I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10, maybe 8 times out of 10 is not going to read an email, right? They're going to read their order confirmation and be like, tight, like got that. That's great. I even do it. I don't look at my order confirmations after. So what's important to me is those transactional emails and looking at like click-through rates and open rates, because in those transactional emails, I'm also putting a lot of informative information for the customer to understand like what are the next steps after it's been sold to you. So again, these are a variety of different things that I'm looking at, and these are a variety of different things that I'm tracking, but this is how granular I get.
Yeah. Amazing. It's so interesting because as a digital marketer, like I preach the same thing, right? We've got to track everything every week. You've got to look at your site traffic, where traffic came from, you know, active email users. You want to look at your conversion rates, your AOV, mm-hmm. your click-through rate, all of that stuff. But I had never really thought, because it's not the area that I focus on, that, you know, you'd also be focusing on the satisfaction levels, the reviews, you know, things that are indicating to you whether the product that's hitting the customer is being well received. And because you're doing so much effort to get people to become a customer, if you then forget about them once they become a customer, then, mm-hmm. you know, that's a real miss for your business. So yeah, thank you for enlightening me about that. Cool. So, and what does your tool or software stack look like for you, for, you know, for the majority of your clients or at festivals? Like what tools do you recommend people use to kind of manage this and track this?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at festivals, it's pretty much the same of like what I like always refer clients to, but at festivals we utilize Customer, which is our like ticket tracking, or I'm sorry, not ticket tracking, our ticketing tool. So any emails that we get, any sort of DMs, SMS messages, like any of that stuff, like all bleeds into Customer with a K. And that's how, like, you know, the support team and the community team will like communicate back and forth with our customers. It also like houses our customers. And then for reviews, I actually really, really, and I will double down on this 5,000 times over, love Akendo. And I'll tell you why I love Akendo. Akendo, a lot of people think it's just product reviews, but I have put so many surveying touch points in Akendo recently. So I have our product reviews. I have our MPS in there. I'm eventually moving our CSAT there. I also have the ability to like do one-off surveys through this tool. And the other reason why I really love this tool is because I can get very granular. So for instance, like post-checkout survey, here's just a post-checkout survey to all the customers, right? But they don't actually get granular into, is this a new customer? Is this a returning customer? What product are they purchasing? And, you know, and then diving deep into that granularity again. And Akendo allows you that opportunity to utilize logic based off of new, returning, type of product purchase, attributes. I love that tool. I will double down. This is not paid by Akendo. I am just saying that is one of my favorite tools for me when I talk about consumer insights.
That's awesome. So, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And yeah, one of the, I would add as well, one of the things I love about a Kendo that, you know, some of our clients use it and it's great for post-purchase UGC like testimonial requests. So they've found it to be really good at doing that in a way that's kind of like user-friendly for the customer, makes it easy for them to submit their video reviews.
Yeah. So, yeah. And here's a piece of tactical advice because Jesse and I are nerding out about a Kendo right now. But when we talk about like UGC and like why that's, I mean, obviously UGC is important and I won't dive too deep into it. But the other thing that I really love about a Kendo is like you can get very granular. So if you leave a written review, maybe you're giving 10% off, right? If you're leaving a review with just a picture, you're giving 15%, 20. And then if you're leaving a review with a video, you can get 20%. I'm just saying like, those aren't like the discounts are just, you can get so granular into like the offerings and the rewards.
That's that amazing. I just love it. Yeah. I hadn't realized it was so nuanced.
Yeah. I love it, cool. Man. Again, not sponsored by Kendo, just saying. So customer Kendo, we haven't gotten that far. Customer Kendo, Postscript is one of my favorite SMS marketing tools. I just love the tool. I think it's very easy to use. It's a very good complement to like your email marketing tool. And there's some other feature sets are just like, are just really awesome. Also, the team is like really awesome to work with. So, and we've done a lot of things that not the average customer, Postscript customer would do at Feastables. And they've been very flexible and have been really amazing. So shout out to customer or Postscript. Then at Klaviyo, of course, I think it's really interesting about Klaviyo or just any of these email marketing tools is that when you need to send out, like, of course, your marketing campaigns or your transactional emails, like you can utilize Klaviyo to do those things. But I think something that's like really underestimated that people don't do often is from a post-purchase perspective. Let's say you did a mass sale and I don't know, there was a delay in shipping, right? And I have found this like in a lot of other brands too. They'll be like, oh, we really want to mass email these people to tell them like, hey, there's a shipping delay or like tell them something about their product after the fact. Right. And I'm like, yeah, okay, great. We can easily just build a segment and just like build a nice email and send it to everybody. And so I think it's a very, my point is about Klaviyo is that I think it's a tool that's very underrated that like more CX leaders should also use for like better segmentation. And for the ability to like, if you need to send one-off emails to like large lists of people, you can do it within your email marketing tool and have like all the profile information there. That's my point. Sorry. I nerded out.
Yeah. I know. It's sometimes hard, I find. No, it's awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, it's sometimes hard to explain how awesome Klaviyo is. Like, because occasionally I still do come across a client or a brand that's using MailChimp. And I have to try and sit them down and explain. And there's so many like little things like that, that make it amazing. It's the fact that it's built for e-commerce and it's directly feeding into Shopify and understands like who all your customers are, who's spending the most, what they've bought, when they bought it. That's what makes it so much better than just a standard email tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And just nerd out moment about like bridging the gap between your marketing tools and your CX tools. I think it's really important too, like whether you're talking about your SMS marketing tool, you're talking about Klaviyo or any of these tools that you're like mass communicating to your customer and that has like segmentation built into it. Even a Kendo, right? You should be bleeding that back into your CRM tool. So like I bleed all of this information back into our CRM tool customer. So my agents, whether you're on the community side or the support side, you can see certain information about that customer. So you know what type of service to give that customer. Does that make sense? Like if you're a customer that's like purchased, you know, I don't know, I'm making up dollar amounts, $5,000, right? You should be treating that customer as a VIP customer, and that support agent should also be equipped with that information. All I'm saying, a little tactical advice, put all your tools, your marketing tools, in front of your CX agents so they can see the same information that you see when you're segmenting to them. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, those are my main tools that I utilize and all make talk to each other. So.
Love it. Amazing. We will link to them all in the show notes. So next question for you is, you've been at festivals from the early days, right? I'd love to hear the story of like customer experience at festivals and what you've kind of learned along the way and implemented along the way.
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite stories to tell because I think a lot of people don't know this. So Jesse, hot off the press, you ready? You're getting it.
Ready.
So, you know, I came on board at festivals. I was actually employee 4 right after, you know, the CEO, the COO, and a member of the supply chain, right? So, you know, for them to hire a CX leader as employee 4 before we were even on the market, just goes to show you like the value of like the customer experience and how much we care so much about it, that we've also built the customer experience department as its own org. Like, I don't sit under marketing. I report directly into our CEO. And the reason it's built this way, though, is because we care so immensely about the experience of the customer, not just from a support standpoint, from a community standpoint, from, you know, a digital experience standpoint, that we built CX to be, you know, really just like the top of the line, or I wouldn't even say top of the line, just like best in class from go-to-market stages. So, you know, I came on board back in October before we launched in January 2022. So October 2021 was when I first began. And I was tasked with creating a CX department. And I'll be honest with you, like, I didn't know what to expect. Like, newsflash, I'm not 21. The Botox might tell you I'm 21, but I'm not. But my point is that I didn't know what to expect. I just really didn't know what to expect. And I took the principles that I have always known about customer experience, as far as like building out the right tools and getting the right, like right information to the agents, building out efficiencies and all of these things as best as I could before we launched. And when we first launched, we actually launched with 30 plus agents that were outsourced. So we launched with 30 plus agents that were outsourced, and we only had 2 individuals, agents that were in-house, one being on the CX support side and one being on the community side. We are now 1.5 years later. I no longer outsource my team, and I actually have brought all of customer experience in-house. So each member of our team sits on the Feastable side. And the reason for that is a little bit of, I approach our customer experience very much how our audience would want to communicate with us. So, you know, originally we had started on, it wasn't customer, we started on another tool, and we were just getting mass tickets to us. Like, we were getting mass tickets, like from our SMS channel, mass tickets from our email channel. But I also had produced this web bot on the site. And I noticed that this web bot was getting so much engagement. I mean, like, it was insane. Like, it was deflecting like 100,000 tickets. 100,000 ticket. Wait, I'm not even saying that. 100,000 tickets. Okay, whatever. But anyway, it was like deflecting so much. And I was looking at the pathways of the user behavior. And I was noticing that these people were like so interested in like product ingredients. And they were interested in like this bot telling it jokes and all of these things, that I took that idea of like the bot and I built that into our SMS channel. And as soon as I built it into our SMS channel, it started deflecting 90% of my traffic there too. And then because I had it like deflecting traffic on the website and on the SMS side, I was actually able to like reduce my headcount on the outsourcing side and focus more on bringing my individuals in-house to be really ingrained in the Feastables brand. And listen, and I know I'm like really diving deep into the story, but the reason I'm diving so deep into it is because Feastables care so much about customer experience and the experience of our customer, not just from like a packaging perspective, a taste perspective, and all these other standpoints that I'm telling you, but also like an interaction standpoint where, you know, it's so important to them that like the members that are communicating with our customers are also very ingrained with like Feastables and like core values as well. So that was really important to me to bring that team completely in-house. And I'm able to do it in such like, because now 1.5 years later, you know, like we're not only available in the US in online, we're also available in Walmart, Target, 7-Eleven. We're available in the UK, Australia, and I'm able to scale this massive brand's customer experience because I've doubled down on that digital experience.
Yeah. So can we just back up a little bit? Can you explain to me this? So it's a chatbot that you deployed on the website. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a chatbot and you had programmed it to kind of like answer all the common customer questions and to have some like a fun sense of humor, it sounds like. And by doing that, you reduce the number of support tickets massively.
Yeah, exactly. Because one of the things that I found, and I mean, this comes back, and I think that this tactic, and I'm not saying just like chatbots, okay? I'm saying this tactic of understanding your audience and being able to learn how they want to be communicated to can help you in like how you scale your customer experience from like beginning stage, middle stage, you know, massive stage, right? And so like that's essentially what I did was that I found that like this audience was communicating to this chatbot and like they were communicating in such a way that like they were talking to it as if it was its friend. Like we used to call it Feastybot. It's no longer Feastybot. It's just like chatbot. But they were communicating to Feastybot that it became this like its own personality, right? And it became its own personality to like the point where people looked forward to like when we would put in new jokes or we would put in like new pathways or anytime we would like put on a new product on the site, I would notice a high increase of the interactions of it, like being asked questions about like, what ingredients do you have? Where do you source them? Like all of these, like just this like always on type of salesperson, right? And like, and again, going back to like, I'm not saying like the tactic of a chatbot is like for every brand, but what I am saying is that I doubled down on understanding the audience and understanding how that audience wanted to be communicated to, that I was able to then deflect thousands upon thousands of tickets away from our agents, then I could then scale in a different way. So I think that same tactic can be utilized by a lot of other brands if you just, you know, understand how your customer wants to be communicated to and like offer avenues to communicate to them. So like to even scale it down, like forget the chatbot. Let's say you found out that your customer was like always asking like about a style for a shirt, right? They were like, why did you choose this colorway? Or I don't know, I'm just making up a question, right? Answering those questions on a PDP might reduce the amount of tickets that you get to your agents is my point.
I see, yeah. And how that process of creating that chatbot, because I guess that's something that often is done really badly, right? You see phone companies do it and it's really frustrating because you're trying to get the answer and you're just in a loop and you're getting a stupid answer and you just want to talk to someone real. Like, how did you make sure that it was received positively in that way? And like, what steps did you go through to make sure that it was able to kind of like give the answers people wanted?
Yeah. I hired a copywriter at the time. Like we now have copywriters on staff, but we have more marketing people on staff. But at the time I hired a copywriter to literally just study Mr. Beast videos and like how this and like comments, right? And then write material based on that. I'm not saying that like everybody can do that, but I'm saying like the wherewithal of like thinking like I need to be very specific about the tone of voice of this, so that like it will continue to get engaged with and it won't feel like so robotic was really important to me. And then, you know, on the other side of it too, is like just creating like pathways and modules and all of that stuff, right? I kind of just like put myself as if I was that customer and like, if I'm going to come to this website and look at and have questions about a product, or if I'm a part of this audience and I like see that they love to like joke around, right? Like I'm going to build material based off of like what I think that this customer would like and know and whatnot. Third, to be honest with you, before Feastables, and I said this, but like before Feastables, I actually worked in SaaS. And so I come from a very like tech support, product support type of background, right? Where it's like, okay, if somebody writes in and they're like, I need to change my password, you want to be the most helpful as possible and also collect the most amount of information as possible. So then that way, like your agent can quickly help them. I built this bot based off of that theory though, of like, okay, let me collect the most information as possible. but also let me be the most informative so I can inform the customer while it's interacting with this chatbot. And if they say even one time, speak to a human, it immediately transfers you to a human. You're not stuck in this like loop of like, oh, let me go look at this FAQ article or this or that. That like, so I just kind
love
of
that.
Took, yeah. Yeah. Like, cause that's the thing is like, you also have to remember too about like just general user behavior. Not every person wants to talk to a human. Not everybody wants to talk to a human. Right. And like, and that applies to like phone calls, that applies to emails, that applies to everything. So giving, like thinking about your experience as if you are speaking to somebody who doesn't want to talk to a human, give them the most information as possible, but always have the human available on the other line. And then lastly, I also, and this is just like how I think of writing even like FAQ articles or articles on a PDP or just writing in general, just like general copywriting to my customer. Again, going back to like, not everybody wants to talk to a human. Also, not everybody learns the same way. So some people like learn by like written form. Some people learn by like vocal form, and some people learn by like how-to videos, right? So when I'm like creating an FAQ doc, and if it has to get very technical, I always encourage like anybody that I'm working with, myself, to always create material for the three different styles of learning. Does it make sense? So like, even like in a, if you want to apply that to an email, right? Like, have a good visual of like, if it's, you're giving a how-to to enter a giveaway, have a good visual of like how to enter the giveaway, right? But also include words, make it fun and interactive. So then people actually retain the information.
That's awesome. Love that. So what do you see on the horizon for the field of customer experience? What are the bears around the corner and what are you most excited about?
Yeah. I think what's really interesting and what's been happening in like both the e-com space and the SaaS space, to be honest with you, is that there's people out there that are like me, like Eli Wise. You know, Eli Wise, he's senior director of CX at Jones Road Beauty. And, you know, there's Michael Baer, he's SVP of CX at Figs, the scrub company. But I'm mentioning these people because it's like, they're all like, we all are becoming like in these roles of like executive leadership in CX, which is kind of paving the way for junior level CX managers, associates, that there is a career path in CX. Like, you can do this long term. And I think that's like really exciting for the industry. But I also think what's really interesting is that CX and retention is like just getting, it's kind of getting taken more seriously by brands, by companies, because there's people like myself and the individuals I named out there that are actually preaching to the choir. They're actually preaching about consumer behavior and why it's so important. So I think like, we're honestly like paving the way for not only like companies to take it seriously, but we're paving the way for other individuals to have career paths in this. And I also think that, you know, me standing on like my hill of like, listen, customer experience isn't just customer support. And the reason I say that is because it's literally the study of your consumer behavior. And I think if brands can double down on like studying your consumer behavior and the why and the what of why your customers come back or why your customers are your customers, then that's elevating CX and that's elevating retention. So it's like, I think there's a lot that is like around the corner for it. I think there's new tactics and new techniques that are yet to even be talked about. But I think it's kind of just having its day. And I think it's really dope. And I think it's really important to really study your consumer behavior and not just a marketing perspective, but like an insights perspective.
Amazing. Love that. Yeah. Feels really exciting. Feels like an exciting time to be in this industry for sure. And what about e-commerce? What do you see on the horizon for e-commerce in general? Anything you'd want to chat about with the audience?
Yeah. I think what's really interesting and like, again, why like doubling down on understanding consumer insights and consumer behaviors is so important is that, you know, e-com had like a big boom in like recent years because of the pandemic and because so many people were like at home and shopping online. And I think we've seen that shift in, you know, in the last year that, you know, you really have to like double down and really like make your customers really want to come back to you rather than purchase you in retail, right? So I think what's like coming around the corner for e-com is like really just the emphasis, again, the emphasis on like the consumer insights, the market research, and the emphasis on understanding like consumer behavior and dialing that into your practices as like marketing individuals, as supply chain individuals, as just whatever general operator that you are. It's really taking like that consumer behavior and every action that you're taking makes an impact to your experience. So then that way your customer continuously comes back. I think that's the next thing for e-com is just doubling down on that.
Amazing. Yeah, that's so true. I think we can't, the days are gone when we could just like harvest Facebook for customers, make them profitable on the first purchase, 10x ROAS, you know, we've got to work a lot harder now to like to delight them, keep them coming back. And yeah, I love the way you approach that. Cool. So where can our audience find you, follow you, hear more from you?
Yeah. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn these days. So Jess Servion. And I also have a website, jessservion.com. Both places, write me an email through my website or DM me on LinkedIn. And I promise you, I will respond.
Amazing. Thanks so much for coming along.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the E-commerce Impact Podcast. If I can ask you one favor, can you please make sure you subscribe? And if you can, leave us a review. It helps us have a much bigger impact with what we're trying to do here at the E-commerce Impact Podcast. Now, if you're ready to take your e-com store to the next level, then go to www.ecommerceimpactpodcast.com and click on the button to book a strategy call with me or my team. We offer a free order of your advertising and a custom growth plan, so you really have nothing to lose by getting in touch and jumping on a call with us. See you soon, and watch out for the next episode in 2 weeks' time.